Okay, in this session we're going to talk about hybrid apps or hybrid web apps. This is this idea of taking an application, taking a web-based application, making it available in the app stores on Windows, iOS, Android, Office, and various other places. So the fusing of web technologies with native app technologies and looking at what that's all about. So hybrid apps are controversial things. Some people love them, some people hate them, some people have very passionate views about what hybrid apps are, what they should and shouldn't be. So me and some chums went and interviewed some people, various people from the IT industry, to see what they thought about hybrid apps, and this is what they said.
Hybrid apps? What the hell are hybrid apps?
Look, it really is simple. Sooner or later, the world is going to wake up and realise that the only language for apps is JavaScript, web or not.
Well, it doesn't involve learning anything new, which is why it's great, I guess. And if it involves playing anything on the App Store, I would much prefer to use web technologies. So I'm for it, I guess.
Hybrid apps. You probably don't want to get me started on hybrid apps. They make me extremely angry.
JavaScript is the Swiss Army knife of programming languages. It's the only thing that is needed, period.
What matters for me as a designer with hybrid apps is that they are actually better. They're more beautiful than the website is. They're easier to use, and they add something to the user experience.
And the way we built the business has been building it around customer experience, which is absolutely paramount to us. We've just spent millions redesigning and redeveloping our website that's available on a load of platforms. And the key thing for us is to provide the best customer experience on those platforms to enable people to buy our product.
I've spent years working on how to get an app to work perfectly in its chosen environment, on its chosen operating system. I go to the stores these days, I think, great, there's a new app there. What is it? It's the bloody website. It's the website, but it doesn't even work anymore.
Even thinking about some of the other languages, those grotesque languages such as C# and Java, makes me, one, emotionally upset, and two, physically nauseous.
I can see that there may be some ROI and TCO advantage of hybrid apps in some areas in terms of, you know, partial reuse, etc. But the key thing for us is the customer experience. And if hybrid apps can't give me that, I'm not interested.
Couldn't care less.
So there we go, that's what people think of hybrid apps. We've got a few different opinions there. We've got the developer who's really passionately against hybrid apps. We've got the businessman who's kind of sees the TCO benefits, and then the user at the end who just couldn't care less. As long as it works, it's fine by him. So we can look at some options here around choosing hybrid apps. When is hybrid a good choice for you, and when is it not a good choice? We're then going to look at some tools and techniques for actually building hybrid apps, and we look specifically at Windows and Office because we've got some goodies inside Windows and Office that really make this quite a compelling proposition. So what are the options around hybrid apps? Well, first of all, what are the options around apps full stop? App strategy. There are four main approaches to building an app for a native operating system such as iOS or Android or Windows. Firstly, you have the native packaged app. So this is an app that's been designed and built specifically for a particular operating system, let's say iOS. So somebody's built an app for iOS, it's been written in Swift or Objective-C, it's designed to work with the iOS system, it runs natively on the platform, it uses platform capabilities, and it's specific to that platform. It goes into the iOS store or the App Store and users download and sort. So these are generally best of breed apps. They're generally very good. They work very fast and smoothly. They're generally very, very polished, and they're generally very expensive to build as well, especially when you're doing it for lots of different platforms. Next, we have what we call native hybrid. So this is where we're taking web technology, such as HTML, JavaScript, CSS, but you're still building a native app. So you're still building something that runs natively on the operating system. It still has access to the platform capability, just like a fully native app. But you're using your web skills, so you're not having to learn, for example, Swift. You're able to still use JavaScript. Now, these are facilitated by generally by something called Cordova, Apache Cordova, which allows you to target native APIs using JavaScript, but not always. So Windows, for example, has native support for web technologies. The benefit here is you're still going into the store, it still has a native app, but you're using a more generic set of technology in the web technology. Next, we have hosted hybrid apps. So this is where we take a combination of an actual web application that's running from a web server that's accessible through a web browser, and you're making and you're combining that with native elements. So you're really maximizing web investments here. So you build a single web application and you're trying to effectively frame that in the various app stores and the various app platforms. You can use native features with these things. Sometimes they're installable, sometimes you can get them from the store. So you get all the benefits of being in the store and having it feel like a native app without the cost and overhead of actually writing and supporting a fully native app. And then finally, we just have web applications. So this is where you're not really in the app stores, you're just on the web and you build your application as a web application. It's the ultimate cross-platform app in many ways. It's accessible via any browser on any device. Backwards compatible, there's no store to worry about. It's a single thing that you have to build and maintain. And there's some really good examples of this, and we'll talk about some examples later on about this. Now, generally speaking, there's a trade-off between effort and cost versus quality and experience. On the far left, the effort and cost is very high for a native packaged app and also a native hybrid app. But generally, they give you a good quality experience. So if you really need the very best experience, this is a really good approach to look for. On the right, with the hosted hybrid and the web applications, you're lowering your TCO here. So you're lowering the overall cost and effort involved in building the application. But in some cases, you're lowering the quality and experience as well. Now, it's not to say that a native packaged app is always better than a hosted hybrid app, or a web app is always worse than a native hybrid app. There are obviously good examples and bad examples in all four categories. But generally speaking, as a rule of thumb, if you want the ultimate quality experience, you're looking at a native or native hybrid. If you're looking at TCO and overall cost of ownership, as well as quality experience in some cases, you're looking at hybrid and web applications. So when should you choose hybrid? When is hybrid right for your application? When is it not right? Well, it starts off, if you're considering a hybrid app, so you're considering using one of these technologies, using hybrid or hosted hybrid, the thing that you put into it is very important. So generally speaking, if the thing you're building your hybrid app based on is not very good, then the thing that's going to be produced is not very good. The web application itself or the HTML code itself is very, very important. That's going to dictate how good the app is. You can't take a bad website, wrap it in hybrid technologies and hope to get a good hybrid application. It doesn't work like that. What you're looking for really in terms of a hybrid app is you're looking for responsive design. It has to work across all of the viewports. So in the mobile app world today, in terms of apps with interfaces at least, we go anything from kind of 4 inches on the small phones right up to 80 inches on the Windows Surface Hub and everything in between, an Xbox. Now Windows represents either end of those scales, but even in iOS and Android, there's lots of different viewports, there's lots of different orientations to consider. Your app has to respond appropriately to all of those views. It has to work for touch. You know, native apps, touch is almost a mandatory thing these days. If your app isn't designed to work used with a finger or one of the other modern input devices such as ink or even Kinect cameras, that kind of thing, it's not going to make a good experience on the app. It has to be lightning fast. So we've looked at performance before, but the speed of the app and the responsiveness is a really key thing. And this is one of the things that a lot of native app developers will say that hybrid apps can't do. They can in some cases, but you have to work at it. And just finally, try and avoid all of the kind of nastiness of the web. So try and avoid banner ads, try and avoid these big, huge menus, try and avoid this kind of 1024 pixel column in the middle of the web page, huge footers, that kind of thing. All the stuff that makes websites obviously websites. Design your hybrid app to be an app rather than a website. If you do this, you're going to get happy users. This is my favorite GIF in the world. This is Steve Ballmer and Bill Gates doing a happy dance dressed like the 1980s. We'll just enjoy that for a little bit. There we go, that's enough of that. So how do you make hybrid awesome? How do you make a really good job of building a hybrid app? Well, oops. You start by, like I say, make it responsive, make it touch friendly, make it adaptable to the screen size, use the whole screen. Don't have big sort of channels on the side of the app of white space, unless that's part of the design. Make it perform really fast. Use tools like YSLO and PageSpeed to really analyze your web application, see if it's as fast as it can be. Where appropriate, make it work offline. The web can work offline. So there's technologies like App Cache Manifest, Local DB, Local Storage, which means that you can have an offline web page. Have a look at app.ft.com as an example of a really well-designed offline web page. You can literally unplug your device and browse the site as if it is connected. It uses local storage. You can even go to pages that you've not been to before. So it's not relying on browser caching necessarily. So you can definitely make an app, a web application offline. You just need to work a bit harder at it than in a native app. Then design as well for an app. Design it to be like an app. There's lots of frameworks out there to help you do this. There's Ratchet by the guys behind Bootstrap. There's Foundation for Apps by Zurb. There's Ionic, which gives a web application a really nice kind of iOS look and feels. Kendo UI. There's a whole load of resources, CSS-based resources that let you design or help you design your app to look like an app rather than a website. And finally, where possible, do platform integration. So at the very least, try and do icons and tiles so that people users launch the app from the start screen of their device. But yeah, if you can use Cordova, then use it. If you can use, I'm going to talk about Westminster and Office.js in a bit, but these are technologies that really help you have deep platform integration on Windows and Office. So with that in mind, let's take a look at how we actually build hybrid apps. So that's kind of why you should use hybrid, why you shouldn't use hybrid. Let's have a look at building hybrid apps now. Now, if we take away native package, native hybrid and web applications and focus just on hosted hybrid, there's some really interesting technologies in this space of having a web application that's framed inside a native app. So what is a hosted hybrid app? So firstly, as with any store app, you have an app package. That will contain a web view. So all of the platforms have a web view. Android has a few different web views. Inside that web view, you point it at a server-hosted web application. So some kind of URL that you could get to through a browser. This would have HTML, CSS, JavaScript. It could be any backend stack. It could be ASP.NET, Node, PHP, take your pick. Static HTML if you wanted to. It will have images and icons on there, and it will have something called a W3C web app manifest, which I'll talk to in a second. It might also have metadata as part of the app package. So this is data that describes the app to the platform. It's not coming necessarily from the web server here. This is something that you have in the app package itself. You might also have native code. So in some cases, you might have a blend of code coming from your server-hosted web app and from your native app. And you publish that to the App Store, hopefully to all three app stores. And ideally you have some kind of platform integration, but as a minimum, you're going to have icons and tiles on the start screen of the device, but hopefully a little bit more than that if we can with Windows. So the W3C Web App Manifest, this is something that I mentioned in the previous slide. So this is a W3C standard that's currently working draft, or last time I checked it was working draft. And what this does is it really describes metadata for a web application. So it's a JSON-based manifest file that's stored on the server alongside things like robots.txt, those kinds of files. And it's a JSON file that describes the title, the images, the orientation, what's considered in scope for the application, so that when this website is rendered on a native app, via a native app, it gives it kind of a helping hand, a standard way of describing how the app should behave. So this is a standard that Microsoft's involved with, but it's also other people. So Mozilla, you can see from the editors there, Mozilla, Intel, Google, lots of people involved in this standard. It's an open standard, which Microsoft are interested in, but it's not necessarily a Microsoft thing. Now, if you've got one of these files, you can use something called Manifold.js. So Manifold.js is a open source tool developed and funded by Microsoft. And what it does is it lets you create hybrid app projects based on for multiple platforms based on a web application. So you take a web application, you run it through Manifold.js, and it will give you a development project for Windows, or iOS, Android, Chrome, Firefox, all these other platforms that you can simply publish up to the stores. It's driven by that web app manifest, so it will look at that manifest file and get its data from the manifest file. It's you can use native hosted or Cordova. So if you're running on something like iOS that doesn't support native JavaScript, it uses Cordova to let you get to those native APIs, same with Android. Windows, however, has native support for JavaScript, so it doesn't need Cordova in that case. You can create your own platform with these folds, and there's a new version due very soon. It's actually an NPM package, or you can use the web interface to generate these files. So now we're going to look at a demo. So we're going to take 10 minutes and we're going to try and create an app based on a single web page, but for Windows 8, Windows 10, iOS, Android, Chrome, Firefox, Cordova, and Office in the next 10 minutes, the remaining time for this talk. Okay, so I'll start off here. So this is an application that I've got called Sentimental. So this is a web application. It's built in ASP.NET, but the fact that it's ASP.NET is very irrelevant. It's just a web-based application. What it does, it lets you take some text and it lets you analyze the sentiment of that text. It's actually backed by the Microsoft Cognitive Services APIs, the text analytics one specifically. But for the purposes of this demo, it is just a web application. I can type in any text at all, does not matter, in here. I could try and spell that correctly. Do analyze, it's going to give me both a percentage of the sentiment there. So that one was a 44% phrase, and it will extract key phrases as well. So the word text has been extracted here in this particular example. Now, it's a responsive web application, so I can resize my browser here, and it will respond back down to the right viewport for me. And it's obviously, as you can see, hopefully by the design, it's designed to work with touch. The buttons are nice and big. There's plenty of spacing in between things. But it's a fairly simple application, but it's good enough for what we need here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take that application and I'm going to run it through Manifold.js. So Manifold.js is available here on this website. So I can go to generate now. I can enter the URL for my web application and do get started. So what's going to happen here is the Manifold website is going to go and look at that project, that web application. It's going to see if there's a manifest file on there. There is in this case, and it's extracted all that information. So you can see the manifest actually has loads of images in there, the various icons for the various platforms. It's got the URL, its portrait, it's at the top here, it's extracted the name and short name. If we actually take a look at this in another tab, we can see it's called manifest.webappmanifest. Oops. And this is the file itself. So it is just a JSON file. I wrote this by hand. It's nothing that complicated to it. It's just a JSON file with a load of metadata in it. So Manifold has extracted that. If you don't have one of these, you can use this interface to actually build your own file and upload it to the server. And then when you're done, you just use this button at the bottom here to generate packages. And it's going to actually go ahead and download a zip file of stuff in there for you. So that's great. It's also available as an NPM package, which is probably the more realistic way that you might use this if you're working with Manifold. Okay, so I've got NPM installed in here. So I could go NPM install, do /g to make it global, manifold.js, and that would actually install the package. I've actually got Manifold already installed, so I don't need to do that in this case. Once you've got Manifold installed, you can go manifold.js. You can put in the URL that you want to work with, which is my main URL there. You do /d. I don't know what /d means. It's just in all the samples, so it seems to be important. And then demo dump, and then give it a name. So I'm just going to call this MF. Click OK. And so this via NPM or via Node is going to go away, take that website, take the manifold file in the website, and construct all of these platform-specific web projects for me. Okay, seem to be having some problems doing that in the console there. I'm just going to try doing it in PowerShell. Sometimes it works a little bit better in PowerShell for some reason. I'm not quite sure why that is. I've never figured it out, but let's give it a go. So in terms of the actual package, it's exactly the same. It's still calling NPM. I think there's an NPM problem there. So if I just do the same thing in PowerShell, so manifold.js, sentimental web, azurewebsites.net, I'm going to call this MFPS1. Well, let's just see if that works better there. yeah, it's working better there. So I think that's a node problem on my particular machine. You shouldn't have any problem in there, whether it's PowerShell or the Windows console, or however you normally execute NPM packages. So what it's doing there is it's going off to, it's downloaded the manifest file, and it's going off and it's building these client projects, these platform projects for Windows, iOS, Android, etc., etc. It's putting them on my machine there locally. So in a second, once that's done, we'll be able to go open up and take a look through these projects. Okay, so that looks like it's finished now. So let's go to my local machine. Go to my demo dump, and there it is, MFPS1. And there it is, it's created a folder called Sentimental, and there's all the projects that it's created for me. So I can see that I've got Android, Chrome, Cordova, Firefox, iOS, Web, and Windows 10. So I'm not particularly an Android developer, but if I look at this, this should look fairly familiar for Android developers. It's using the Cordova tools to bridge the gap between JavaScript and Android itself. Likewise, if I look at the iOS folder, this should look fairly familiar again for iOS developers. I'm not an iOS dev, so I don't know, but apparently it is. And so the idea is you can take these projects and you can literally just open them up, publish them to the store, and off you go. But let's have a look at the Windows 10 project, because there's some interesting things in that. So I'm just going to here, going to source an app.js project. So ever since Windows has had an app store, we've been able to publish apps in JavaScript. So having JavaScript with Windows apps is no new thing. It's been there since Windows 8.0 first came out. But what this app is basically a JavaScript app, and it's going to have the start URL for the app set to be my public URL, which we'll see in a second when it loads up. And that means when it runs the app, it's going to literally just display the URL, but display it in the context of an app window rather than through the browser window itself. Okay, took a little while, but we're getting there now. Okay, this is now loaded. So inside the Windows app, we have this thing called a package.apex manifest. So this is basically the metadata file for the app itself that's going to describe the app to the Windows App Store. So you can see that this has been pre-populated with information from my manifest file. So it's got the display name of the app, the start page, the description, that kind of thing. If we go into Visual Assets, you'll see that the icons that are listed in my manifest file have been downloaded for me. I can click all image assets and see the different sizes that are available there. We've got this interesting section called Content URI. So what this is, so all app stores have this idea of a Content URI, which describes what's in scope for the app and what's out of scope. So anything on that domain name is considered to be part of the app. So HTTP or S, sentimentalweb.azurewebsites.net. If the app tries to go to anything that's not on that domain name, it's going to pop it out to the default browser. So let's now just run this app and just see what this looks like just straight away. So this is going to launch as a Windows app. I'm obviously running on Windows 10 here. This is only supported on Windows 10 in this context. So straight away, you've got a splash screen there. So it starts to feel like a native app almost instantly. In the bottom of the screen there, we've got an icon that looks like, again, a native app icon. It looks completely at home amongst those other icons that I've got there. And the app loads. You can see this is the same website that we looked at before. It's working the same way. I can still copy text into it. I can still do analyze. Oops, I need to paste that text as well. It's exactly the same thing, because all this is doing is it's rendering the web application as part of a Windows app. And one of the other things I can do here is I can search And it shows in the store there. So it's saying that this is a Windows app. It's been included in my search results. I can even pin this to my start menu if I want to as well. So I can go pin to start, and that should hopefully show up. There it is. It shows up there as a start menu item as well. So we've got quite deep integration just straight out of the box with Windows without really having to do anything. I could publish this to the Windows Store straight away, and it would be ready to go. But I want to show you some extra stuff that we've got in Windows specifically. So I'm going to just close that app down a second, and then I'm going to go into the actual web project. So this is an ASP.NET Core web application that we've got running the site. So this has been published all along. I've not made any changes to the website itself. But in the index page, you'll show here some JavaScript that's specific to Windows. So what this JavaScript does, and like I said, this has always been there, it's just not been activated to this point. So it does a feature detect for Windows, and then if it finds Windows, it sends a toast, a tile, and a pop-up, passing in some data that it's received from, in this case, the Razor syntax for ASP.NET. Now what these files do is they refer to a file that I've developed called windows.js, which has these functions inside it. Now, you don't need to necessarily worry about Windows code. If you've never done Windows JavaScript code before, you don't need to worry about it. But just know that this is Windows JavaScript. So these functions here, so you can see we're doing windows.ui.notifications, those kinds of things. These are functions that you expect to find in a Windows native JavaScript, but it's running from the web. It's running from a web server, and it's being executed to a web server and reaching down to affect the Windows APIs locally. So we've got CentOS, Sentile, and then we've got send pop-up as well. So again, it's all using these Windows APIs, these Windows namespaces here that you wouldn't normally be able to use outside of Windows itself. That's always been there. To activate that, I just need to go to my manifest file, and you'll see we've got this WinRT access. So this is saying what level of access that website's got over Windows itself. So I can change that to be all and give it full access. And I'm just going to run the exact same app again. I'm just going to save that quickly. Now, I've made no changes whatsoever to the website itself at this point. I've just enabled access to the Windows runtime for that website. So let's see how this works now. So if I take some text now, I'll try copying that again and pasting it in here. There we go. And do analyze. We're going to get some extra features now. So just wait for that to come back. So a couple of things have happened there. So firstly, we've got this native pop-up. So this is not a web pop-up. This is a fully native pop-up here. It's saying the sentiment score is 88%. You may have noticed that a notification popped up in the right-hand side there. And you can see that in the bottom, it's saying I've got one notification. If I click onto my action center here, we can see the sentiment score was 88%. So we can see that we've received that pop-up notification, that tile notification from within Windows as well. If we repin the app to our start menu, we should also see that we've got live tiles. So the sentiment score is 88% there, and that'll roll around again to say the key phrases were the word sentiment and awesome, which we can verify by looking at that there as well. So we've got a couple of different extra bits of native integration here. So I've chosen some really simple examples there. But you can access the whole of the Windows runtime with this stuff. It doesn't have to be little simple things like live tiles. Live tiles is a great place to start. You can invoke Cortana, you can use local hardware, you can use the camera, geolocation, anything you can access through the Windows runtime, you can access through this as well. So that's pretty cool. And that's Windows and some of the integration we've got with Windows. What I want to do now is look at Office. So just before I get to that, I'm just going to load Office. So Office actually has an app store. A lot of people don't know this, but it has a fully featured app store. It works in the same way that any other app stores do. You can type some random text in Office. I go to this insert menu, and we've got a store icon here where I can actually insert apps or add-ins as they're called. Now we've got a whole load of add-ins in here. Lots of different types of add-ins depending on what you are. It's just a very typical app store really. I'm going to choose Wikipedia. I'm going to trust Wikipedia to have access to this document. And Wikipedia is loaded on the right-hand side here. It lets me do good things like I can search for Microsoft, I can see what Wikipedia know about Microsoft, and that's all great. One of the really cool things that it does, though, is I can select text inside Office, inside Word in this case, and it's automatically going to go and filter on that on the add-in. So you see I've selected in Office, and the add-in itself is filtered to that content. I can look through the content inside the add-in and find out what Wikipedia says about the word video. I can actually insert stuff back from the add-in into Office as well. So that's really cool. And the great thing about it is this add-in is a web application. So everything that's shown inside this frame on the right-hand side is HTML JavaScript running from Wikipedia's web servers, which is great. So I can theoretically make an Office add-in out of our website that we've got, our sentiment analysis website, which is what I'm going to do now. So I'm going to go file new project in Visual Studio. And this time, rather than choosing web, I'm going to go to Office. I'm going to choose App for Office. If you don't have that installed, you haven't got the Office tools installed, there will be a link there to install those if you've not already got them. But it is available in any version of Visual Studio 2015. Now, Office has a few different types of apps. We're not going to go into detail here, but the one we just looked at was a task pane, so let's create one of those. Let's make it available for the whole of Office, Excel, PowerPoint, Word, etc., and click Continue. So what this is creating for us now is two things. One, a little local static web application, which we're not going to use. And two, Office has its own type of manifest file, its own type of metadata that it describes the app to the Office store. And we're going to make some changes to that to make it use our web application. So just whilst that's loading, I'm going to go over and just grab the URL again. Now, again, this has always been in there. So if we go to the layout page for this web application, you'll notice here we've got this section here of JavaScript code for Office. So what this is doing is it's invoking the JavaScript, the Office JavaScript library, and it's running app.js and officeapp.js. And officeapp.js has some JavaScript in there which does things with Office. So these API calls are Office API calls, where we've got office.context.document.addHandlerAsync. That's handling some selection being changed inside the document. So all you need to do really is learn the Office JavaScript library and you're away. It's just pure JavaScript apart from that. So, and what we're going to do now is we're going to point this Office app at our web application and have that execute inside Office and do some interactions with Office itself. Okay, so that's loaded now. I'm just going to close this. We don't need this. And close this, and I'm going to look at this app one manifest file. So this is the kind of metadata file for Office. So you'll see that we've got a name here. The thing I'm interested in here is the source location. At the moment, that's pointing to my local web project, so I'm going to set that to point to my public website, and I just run the application straight away. So this is going to load into Excel by default, just because that's the default. It could be Word, it could be any of the other ones, but it's set to Excel by default. And this works across all versions of Office as well. So Office 2013 and 16 on desktop, iOS, Android, and Windows mobile versions of Office as well, and also the web version. So anywhere where you use Office, you're going to be able to use these add-ins is the idea. So there we go. We've got my add-in available there. I can do some more analysis. Does this really work in Office? I can analyze that, and it'll work in exactly the same way and give me some text back. I can also type some text. And the cool thing about it is when I select that text, it's going to set that to be the input for the search in there. So it's handled the event of the selection changing in Office, and it's set that to be my input text in my add-in as well. And I can just go ahead and analyze that. There is a version of this in the Office store, which is a lot more functional than this. If you just search for sentimental, you'll find it. But the point here is that we've got interaction between the add-in, which is just a web application, and Office itself. So we've covered quite a lot of stuff there. We've covered building an app. Firstly, taking a web application, using Manifold to make it available in Windows, Windows 10, iOS, Android. We've looked at some specific stuff around Windows 10, around having that deep integration with the APIs. And again, we've made an app in Office based on the same web application. Took a little bit longer than 10 minutes, but not far off. So what have we covered there? So firstly, choosing hybrid. When should you choose hybrid? When shouldn't you choose hybrid? Make sure the app is a good candidate for hybrid before you consider it. Building hybrid, we've got some tools. We've looked at the web manifest file. We've looked at the different types of apps you can create. We've looked at Manifold.js, we've looked at the Windows Westminster stuff, and we've looked at Office.js as well. So you can contact me on Twitter, on my email. You can go to martink.me, which is my website that has various links and resources. There's lots of stuff on this topic on there. Thank you very much.